I think we have a quorum. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back from lunch. Basically, my name is Robert Perry. I'm the Director of Equity Research at Exia Ventures, Exia Capital Markets in the U.S., covering the transportation and shipping industry. And today I'll be hosting the LPG panel. First, we have John Lycouris, who's the CEO of Dorian. He's been the CEO since inception and with Eagle Ocean since 1993, and he started in shipping back in 1974, so no offense, but pretty much as long as I've been alive. So. Next, we have Vasilis Ketsakov. Is that correct? Vasilis is the vice chairman of Elitzin since 2014 and has been in shipping for at least 20 years, I believe, as well. And next to him is Charles Maltby, who's the chairman and CEO of Epic Gas. Charles has been with Epic since 2014 when he took over the chairmanship, and then in 2015 became the CEO as well. He started at Mobil and chartering back in LPG and chemicals back in 1992. So we got about 80 years experience here in the LPG industry on the panel today. All three of them have pretty much a little bit different strategies. Dorian is all VLGCs. Elitzin has the medium-sized, if I'm not mistaken, 35 cubic meters vessels. And then Epic, of course, has the smaller sizes. So, I mean, let me start by asking, I guess, the general question in the market. I mean, the LPG market obviously is different than most of the other shipping markets. It's a little more industrial, and there's different drivers to growth than some of the other sectors. And definitely the different size fleets have different growth drivers as well. So, I mean, let me start with John. What are the big drivers, do you think, for your fleet, for the VLGCs, and for the LPG market in general?
I think that LPG has, in the recent years, and especially since the shale revolution that caused the exploration of additional natural gas and natural gas liquids that go along with it, has produced substantial amounts of propane and other like butanes and pentanes. And it has seen a market increase of that product and its use, not only in home heating and cooking, but also in the petrochemical industry. So as a result, I have seen the last 5 years an increase in transportation, seaborne transportation of the product. It is readily and easily transported, and shipping has existed since the 70s for this type of product. And as a result, we have seen a substantial building of the fleet with newer ships, with newer technologies, and we have seen an increase in maritime transport of LPG to faraway places where it's really needed for, as I said, home heating and cooking, and for the petrochemical industry. I'll stop there.
Okay, yeah. Vasilis, I don't know if you want to talk about it a bit.
Yeah, just to add to John, that most recently, since about two-thirds or three-fourths, between two-thirds and three-fourths of the use of the product is for domestic use, as John said, most of the growth recently has been in India and China and emerging markets in general, which are, you know, just because they're industrializing and urbanizing, they're just consuming a lot more of this clean product. Auto gas is a growing segment as well, but in very distinct markets. And then petrochemical sector is also growing, so these are the key drivers.
Gotcha. Charles, for the smaller sizes, is more
coastal. Thank you for having me on the panel. I think it's been a very exciting 5 years. We've seen global seaborne trade of LPG grow from 60 million tons a year to about 86 million tons a year. So that's around about 10% year-on-year growth for the last few years. And as my colleagues say, it's been driven a lot by the U.S. shale in the last 2 years. Going forwards, LPG has still got the tailwind, if you like, the support of the fact that it's perceived as a more environmentally friendly energy. So the cycle there is still supporting that growth. And then at the same time, we have the economies such as Iran and Iraq coming back online to deliver extra volume. We've already seen on the smaller ships some volumes from Iraq, for instance. So that's supporting the overall LPG trade. Then at the same time, the cheap LPG is also now helping growth in the petrochemical trades, which also flows down into what we carry on our smaller ships. So our smaller ships can also carry things like propylene that come out of the PDH plants.
Okay. You know, you guys have all mentioned it, and we have seen phenomenal growth in the LPG sector. But, of course, just like any shipping sector, the order book has ballooned dramatically over the last few years as well. And it's really put a damper in the market as some of these projects have been delayed and you've seen the vessels being ordered. How long do you think it'll take before demand or the increased capacity keeps the market in check? Let's start with Vasilis, if you want to.
I think it's important to distinguish between segments. So it's different. The answer is different if you're talking about Vs versus MGCs versus handy sizes, where we also have a presence there. With our newest ethylene ships, or this pressurized ships. So, again, it's different market to market, segment to segment. But you know, the Vs do similar in a way to tankers, but actually more so than tankers, exert at least a psychological pressure. So, I think for the health of the market overall to recover, you know, to come back, we need to see the V sector sort of coming back. And I defer that mostly to John, but my own opinion is at least a year and a half of pain before you see the recovery. But one other point I want to say, though, Robert, is I think it's important to understand why we got here. Yeah. And I'm tying it to the previous comment about demand. I think the huge mistake of various players, promoters, bankers, and a lot of other people was basically not focusing on the demand function 3-4 years ago, which of course was growing, but not growing enough to support the huge orders that were really a lot basically supply driven. So people were too much focusing on excess supply coming out of the U.S. Mm-hmm. And not enough focus on okay, where is this going, and is that going to be consumed, and how much, and so on. So that's a huge lesson, which you know we have to take, and then I think it was very important to stress that point.
Definitely understood. It's always funny when you see excess supply coming on, but people forget: is the demand going to be there to match it or not? I don't know, Charles. On the smaller sizes, the order book, if I'm not mistaken, is a little bit smaller. I mean, how do you feel?
Certainly. Well, we've been experiencing a different supply curve to the bigger ships. So for the last 2 years. We've been bouncing along the bottom, if you like, as to the rate levels we're earning. And we're seeing the order book being very shallow right now. So from our point of view, on the smaller ships, we're actually primed for recovery at some point next year. And then you have to say, well, is that going to be impacted by the softer market on the bigger ships? And we can say, well, quite clearly, historically, that's not the case. But we have a different... also a demand perspective on the tonnage. So for instance, whereas the big ships are very much focused around the long haul routes from say the US or the AG to the Far East, the smaller ships are doing the last mile. So we have maybe 300 ports that we call in an average year, maybe 2,100 port calls on a fleet of 35 to 40 ships. So it's very high touch what we're doing. We have many more options where our ships can trade. And then from our point of view also, about 65 to 70% of our demand is LPG, and then 30% or so is petrochemicals. So we have options as to how we can trade the ships and where we can take them, which means that we're not tied in implicitly to what the big ships are doing and how they're earning.
Thank you. And I guess, John, touching on the larger sizes where the order book is a bit larger, your views?
Yeah, well, we have seen a very large order book. Which, as Vasily mentioned, went to service the supply side of the business. The demand has not come through 100%, but it is coming very strong in the Far East as China, India, Indonesia, and other countries are mentioned and do draw a substantial amount of quantity. The order book, though, is coming to a tail end. We have about 30 more ships remaining, which is less than 20% of the fleet. The fleet has at least 40 vessels that are over 20 years old,
yeah.
Which we'll have to consider scrapping.
Yeah.
This was an industry that had not seen scrapping since 2011.
Yeah.
We just seen the first VLGC being scrapped a week ago. Yeah. I think we're going to see a lot more
yeah.
ships.
Gotcha. That actually was going to touch on my next question, because you just mentioned it, that you know, scrapping has been relatively non-existent in the sector for a while, but it seems to be coming back. And with everything going on, I mean, Charles, I'm curious to hear your views as well on the scrapping side, especially for some of the, you know, the older technology and things like this as we progress through the cycle, I guess.
It's a very interesting sector, because actually the age profile of the fleet is relatively young. There weren't significant new builds brought into the business until the early 90s. So the average scrapping of a vessel, it hasn't really existed in the past. And you, obviously, in order to drive scrapping, you have to have a low market. So we've been in a low market for 2 years. The global pressurized LPG fleet is about 300 vessels. And we've seen 6 vessels scrapped every year for the last couple of years. So that sounds like not much, but it is a couple of percent. The scrapping age remains stubbornly over 25 years of age, even though earnings are at OPEX levels on those smaller ships. There is a scrapping pool, if you like, of smaller, older vessels, which should be scrapped in the next year or two, or should have been scrapped already. And that accounts for another 3 or 4% of the fleet. But because of the age profile of the fleet, there aren't that many older ships to actually take to scrap in the first place.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, Vasilis, if you want to touch on it as well for your size class. Or
yeah, but I agree with the previous comment, but as a percentage of the fleet, we hold the record. And when I say we, not MGCs, but LPG, the LPG sector holds the record across all segments, including LNG. So there's a huge amount of, huge comparatively speaking, but there's a lot of work to be done. We think that unless there's substantial scrapping, the rates will not materially recover. So, I mean, we're talking about, you know, 15% of the fleet. In our segment, it's about 20% of the fleet is over 20 years, and about 15 is over 25. So it's massively, you know, again, relatively speaking, but it's massively an aged fleet,
yeah.
And it has to go before we can see a meaningful recovery.
Gotcha. Of course, one of the other things that people talk about in the industry these days is consolidation, and we've seen some of it in the LPG sector. I mean, obviously, it's not as large as some of the other sectors, so there are some owners that could actually have some power. I mean, do you think we're going to see more consolidation either through M&A activity, which is one way, which, as everyone knows, in shipping doesn't work so well, or through pooling, or let's say pooling of resources, or see more pooling in the spot market at least, from what used to be no spot market to now is a large portion of the market. John, I don't know if you want to start.
Yeah, we welcome the consolidation. We welcome BW concluding something with Aurora. It does seem to fit really well to BW. And following on Vasilis' comments about scrapping, maybe the fit is that BW can rid himself of the older ships, at the same time getting some brand new ships. And it appears to me that that's a good fit for these two. The industry will have one less player, and that's important as well. And yes, consolidation is a discussion point, and we're still waiting to hear from Avance.
Gotcha. Vasilis, do you want to touch on your side?
Yeah, I don't have really much to add from what John said. We welcome that as well. We think there's more to come, also on the smaller sizes. On the other hand, I know Epic and Stealth have been trying to do something forever. So perhaps we can hear a different comment. But I think it's healthy. It's healthy for the industry to team up.
Yeah. Charles, in the smaller sizes, is there more pooling, or should there be more pooling? Or
I think I've just found myself a broker. consolidation obviously has to deliver three things, doesn't it? It has to deliver scale for your business, has to deliver lower costs, and it has to deliver something meaningful for the customer. Otherwise, there's no real point doing it. And when I look around at the fleet in the pressurized sector, so 350 ships on the water, we've got about 40 of them right now, so that's about a 15% market share. We have good scale already in hand compared to our competitors, Stealth, of course, being the other big one. And then you have to look at the fleet around as to the quality of the fleet and say, do you want to merge with that fleet? Do you want to spend real dollars to buy those ships to maybe lose more money tomorrow and then to let the customer down? Because obviously, LPG, you have to have very high quality ships in order to be accepted at the oil major terminals. So it's not as easy as sort of looking at the fleet and saying, that fits, we'll consolidate with that. On the pooling side, there's always been pools in pressurized LPG, so people like Cosan and Unigas and so on. And they've certainly provided a very good way for smaller owners, maybe owners who've got four or five ships, to pool together and to get the benefits of saving costs and providing a good commercial operation for their customers. And I'm sure that those pools will evolve in the next few years and get bigger, and maybe we'll be part of that as well. So I think it's exciting times ahead, and consolidation,
absolutely,
I agree with my colleagues here, is very much a welcome thing for us right now.
Thanks for that. And let me just ask as well, I mean, strategically, how do you guys want to position yourselves to take advantage? I mean, as you mentioned, the LPG sector in general looks to have solid growth through the years. It's going through a bit of oversupply. But, you know, as we look forward into the market and we get past this, say, hurdle of excess capacity, I mean, how do you guys want to position your companies? You know, what are you looking for, and what are your views, where you're going to be in a couple of years from now? I don't know. If we all knew that, of course, you probably wouldn't tell us. But I don't know, Vasilis, if you want to start.
John?
Sorry, John?
No, I'm kidding. Well, we think, first of all, we think smaller is better. So we like the smaller segments. These, while we understand the overall wave, these have always scared us because of the volatility of the rates over time, and that has proven to be the case in this most recent cycle as well, where our rates actually are not good either, but they're doing better than the V's. Of course, a big part of the order book for our segment has yet to be delivered, so we'll see next year. But so, as I said, smaller is better for us. We like also more difficult segments, both commercially and operationally, that ties into our operational skills and strengths as a traditional product tanker owner. So, which means the petrochemical side for us is again, on balance, better than the straightforward propane butane trades. And we wouldn't go down as low, I think, as the pressurized, because I think the fundamentals there are slightly different. And also, something we haven't touched yet, which is the supply situation on the pressurized side, which Charles may want to allude to. On the pressurized side, you have a lot of capacity out of Japan. A lot of small shipyards can deliver these ships, and they're not going out of business as their big cousins in Korea and China. So we're not we don't like the smaller, the much smaller segment because of that factor as well. So we kind of like where we are, which is midsize and lower, and then we'll see how things go.
How about on the spot versus time chartering?
So I think historically, John can attest to that. He's been in the business a lot longer than us, of course, and Charles. This has been quite a bit of a time charter and COA business historically, so I think that will continue to be the case. So a mix of about 50-50, I think, is a good long-term mix between spot and time charter.
Okay. Charles, you want to touch on the pressurized and sort of where you see Epic in a few years?
Yeah, thank you. Firstly, on Vasilis's question on the pressurized fleet in Japan, there's a number of smaller yards in Japan that build the ships, and so they do come to the market quicker than the big ships. And that's why we've been slightly ahead of the VLGCs and the bigger ships in the down cycle, because the same surge of new build orders happened, but the ships are delivered more quickly, about 2 years more quickly, in fact. But like anybody, any shipyard, they struggle to get orders when the rates are low. So we're now coming out the other side of that. So we're probably ahead of the cycle for the bigger ships because of that. It's not just the shipyard that you need when you order a pressurized LPG vessel. You also need a tank maker. So you have to get two suppliers to be aligned to wish to sell to you at the same time. And that means that actually you're sort of threading a needle through a smaller eye each time, because the tank makers in Japan aren't always able to supply when you wish. So the soonest order we could probably place right now is the back end of 18, early 19. So it's still quite a long way out, even though there's only maybe a dozen ships still scheduled to deliver now on the supply side. Our plans for the next few years, we're very focused around what we can control. So we can't really control the market. The market is the market, but we can control the quality of our fleet and ensure that it's a long-term fleet, low cost, high quality. We can control to a certain extent our balance sheet and make sure that that's strong enough to allow us to grow through the market cycle. We can control our SG&A costs, and it's incumbent on us, I think, as one of the larger players in the market to lead in that area and to make sure we have very low overall costs. And then our commercial and technical strategy, which is maybe where we can make the most difference, and it's where we've built our platform, which is around ensuring that we provide customers on a global basis with a really good service, both commercially and technically. And we're not just active in the time charter market. We're very active in COAs. We're very active in voyage charter. We don't really care if it's a one-year time charter or an index-linked rate. We wish to have the relationship with the customer first and worry about the type of contract second. And hopefully we can therefore build longer-term relationships with customers. For us, we also have the benefit of being able to dip into petrochemicals as well as to LPG. So that gives us two strings to our bow, and it enables us to do front hauls and back hauls, and it reduces the amount of time our ships are trading empty, which helps to boost our underlying net earnings. We're very focused around adding in more combinations in those areas in the next couple of years. Our platform is a very strong one because we now have a global presence. We're able to add in extra ships very easily, commercially and technically, and that means we can grow effectively more efficiently.
Oh, thanks. And John, on the VLGC side? I'm sorry.
Yeah. We as a company have come from as you mentioned before, from a long background in shipping, and we've been at it for a very long time. We've traded larger ships before. It was actually the VLCCs that we were trading in the 80s. We feel that we are at home with VLGCs. VLGCs is very similar, as Vasily said, in volatility to VLCCs. There are reasons that we have taken low leverage. We are one of the most low leverage company in the LPG space, in the VLGC space at least. And that is the reason why we want to weather storms and turns of the markets. We've seen these before. So really our intent is to run, to commit to high quality service to our customers, a good and safe environment to our seafarers, and really provide a cost-efficient operation with a healthy balance. That's really where we are.
And on the chartering versus spot versus
chartering
time, I know you have a bit
spot,
of mix.
Yeah, we had always intended to have a larger portion of the book on long-term charter. We currently have 20% of the book on charter, and we do have a pool of VLGCs, which is called the Helios LPG pool, that runs over 30 ships.
Gotcha.
And
okay.
We welcome more.
Yeah.
Good clients, of course.
So if anyone owns any VLGCs? with that, I can open it up to questions. If anyone has any questions they'd like to ask the panelists? Anyone? I think we're okay. With that, let me just thank. Sorry? No, with that, let me thank the panelists for their participation, and we can end it. Thank you very much.